Please stand by.
We now take you live to the Institute of Rational Thought for a special broadcast. Hard-hitting interviews and relevant information to make your day. It's Chad Adams.
And we are back. Heading ever closer to July, state budget, the new budget year starts at midnight. So, did the House do its thing? Did the legislature finally meet the deadline and get a budget up and running? Yes, they did. They got together last night. The House passed it last night. Senate got together this morning. They worked, I think, a day each, and then they're taking a whole week, vacation, I guess. Working one day. They're getting paid for the whole week. They don't get paid much, but hey, one day work week. That's a great, I love that one. You just tape 5 shows in one day and take the rest of the week off. But they did. Essentially passed 100% of what this year was. There were some teacher raises in there, $100 million for some more stuff. And they did get it to McCrory in time to sign it before the 11:59 p.m. deadline. And kind of fascinating. What was most interesting to me was the House released a press release from Tim Moore's office. He's the Speaker of the House. And in the it's called a continuing resolution that allows things to continue operating for another month and a half. McCrory had wanted 30 days, and McCrory took a few swipes at the House. We'll get through the sniping between these groups of individuals. But essentially, here's what's funny. When I read what Tim Moore's people put out there, again, Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican Governor, budget nowhere near. They're so far apart, there's no telling when it will end. It will at least, I wanted to say it would be done by the end of July, but the differences are vast in policy. The different, you would think, if you didn't know better, and you were looking at this and just walking into North Carolina and did not know the political affiliations, and I said, well, the House leadership passed a budget that spent $1.3 billion more dollars than last year, you would go, oh, those were Democrats, right? And then you would say, well, the Senate passed a budget that really constrained spending and held things back in check. Oh, they're Republicans. It is fascinating that in a normal world, that would be absolutely true. But the House Republicans under Tim Moore's leadership have become very, very left-leaning in their approach to governance. And they're so misguided. Again, that sounds negative. Let me try to be positive here. The Republicans of the House have taken leave of their senses with respect to what is conservative and what is liberal. They really, truly believe that the budget they passed, which spent way more than the governor, that spent way more than the Senate, was a conservative budget. And they believe this. They believe somehow in their hearts, oh, we're doing good Republican work. So it's safe to say all those years ago when these same Republicans were fighting against Democrats, accusing them of big spending, a lot of those Democrats weren't spending near as much as the Republicans that replaced them in the House of Representatives. Now, the Senate, you know, obviously much more conservative than the House, also passed a lot of policy in their budget, and 500 pages of it, compared to the House's 300-page budget. Nonetheless, they did pass what's known as a continuing resolution to keep the state government open. Governor's going to sign it. And here, it's just funny, because so Tim Moore sends out a press release, and they highlight 4 things that they think are really, really important and should be highlighted. So here's your opportunity to have your Speaker of the House. You're the Speaker. You're the Republican Speaker of the House. You're issuing a press release basically saying, hey, look, we've got an operating framework. The government stays open. Here's what's important to you to know, according to us. 100% recurring funds for school districts. So that's good. I mean, a large chunk of the state budget is school budgets. They don't know how much money they're going to get. They don't know how to hire teachers. What are they going to do as they get ready for the school year? They don't know. Now they have some assurance at least they're going to be okay. And you raise their teacher pay. Now, I ask you from a conservative standpoint, are these really big-ticket items for the conservatives to be rallied about? Now, it's assurance, and it's necessary. These are that's 2 of the 4 highlights. Starting teacher pay raise and that 100% recurring money for schools. Another education thing, cooperative, innovative, early college high schools. Provide funds for selective, cooperative, innovative, and early college high schools. So, education. And the big 4, the 4th point, according to the Office of the Speaker, and the continuing resolution to keep the state. The big important thing they want everyone to know is that driver's ed continues optional state funding to help educate young drivers. Counties cannot charge more than $65 for a class. Not every family can afford to pay for driver's ed, yet one driver affects everyone on the road. It is important that the state continues our support to ensure that more North Carolinians are responsible drivers. Representative Linda Johnson, Republican, Cabarrus County. House Appropriations Chair. Those are your four. That's the important thing? That's what they want you to know? Now, what's astounding, now I'll say this about our drivers. I don't know what has happened in the past 30 years with our driver's ed programs, but and the signs that went with it, that when I went through it, and I went through it in Tennessee and North Carolina, slower drivers stay left. If you're on a four-lane road, slower drivers stay left. You're not supposed to have to pass someone on the right on a major highway. This is a moment of personal privilege for the host. Those signs used to be all over the place. Slower traffic, stay right. Or faster traffic, stay left. No more. So we have a bunch of, I don't know what driver's ed they passed or where, but they simply just cruise along in the left-hand lane. Not a care in the world. Create Polish roadblocks. Excuse me, no offensive language to Polish people. But essentially, when two cars are driving down the road at the exact same speed on a four-lane road, you can't get around them. They have created an effective moving roadblock that moves at that speed, and everyone's stuck. So, as you're heading towards your July 4th weekend, folks, if you're driving in the left lane and there's nobody, drive in the right lane unless you're passing somebody. Just do it. And if enough of you spread the word and tell everybody, who knows, we might get to some of those drivers that have, you know, just, I guess their elevator doesn't go to the top floor in their head. They think, I'll just drive in the left lane. Anyway, I digress. Driver education, one of the top four things that your legislature wants you to know that they continued funding in the continuing resolution. So now they'll go back and forth, beat up on each other for a while, and we'll move forward on the budget. Now here's where it gets interesting, because the governor did not take... So the governor said, saying, the General Assembly lawmakers, they signaled a possible agreement late Monday. They did have one. The House approved a funding bridge that essentially continues the current year's spending until August the 14th. So 45 days, they're going to keep doing this. Representative Nelson Dollar, Kerry Republican in name only, and senior chairman of the House Appropriations Committee noted it would be 100% funding extension, whereas past continuing resolutions were only at 95%. So he's all happy. Now, here's the funny thing. This is the cleanest continuing resolution I've seen in my 15 years as a legislator, said Skip Stamm, an Apex Republican. It didn't advance without concern, though. Now, here's the funny thing. They're all accolades and smiley faces. But here's the truth. They were unable to get the job of the budget done on time. Cities had to do it. Counties had to do it. Everyone else had to do it. Board of Educations across the state had to do it. But not the House and Senate. They couldn't get it together. The one job, the main job we send them there to Raleigh to do, they didn't get done. They did not get the budget done on time. I realize it's complex. I realize it's a lot of money. I also am allegedly supposed to believe that there are a bunch of conservatives running things, but there are Republicans on the House and conservatives in the Senate. It didn't get done. So you guys failed in getting done what you were sent there to do. This great leadership, this leadership that you told the constituents around the state, look, we have great leadership. Look at our conservative leadership. Look what we're going to come. We're Republicans. We deserve to be in charge. You didn't get the budget done. You just didn't. You didn't get it done. The apparent deal came as Governor McCrory urged lawmakers to move swiftly on a new budget. McCrory sent a letter to legislators Monday calling for a one-month temporary budget. By the way, they went for a month and a half. A quicker turnaround demand than what the House approved Monday, and for an end to negotiation tactics. This is where he starts taking swipes. I do not think this was a wise move necessarily for a governor that will need their help. Negotiation tactics that stall our progress. He referred unfavorably to some legislators' efforts to have their session extended to September or October, noting that 40 states' legislatures have passed budgets. While our thorough and thoughtful debate is appreciated, the people of North Carolina cannot continue to wait as that honorable work turns into negotiation tactics that stall our progress, McCrory wrote. McCrory used the letter to outline his budget and his legislative goals. He wants to build the state's rainy day reserve fund to a minimum of 6% of the budget. It's imperative that we prepare for any potential downturn, McCrory wrote. He wants the economic development plan, which he calls NC Competes, removed from the budget and passed as a separate bill. The legislature's indecision on a firm and sustainable economic development plan is putting North Carolina at a competitive disadvantage for jobs that our Department of Commerce is recruiting now. In other words, McCrory, the governor, is so ashamed of North Carolina that he wants more money to give away. You know, when he goes to another company, look, we're so ashamed of our state that we really apologize that you're not interested in us because of our taxes. You're not interested in us because of our education. You're not interested in us because of our low crime, great location, mountains, coast, and all the other great things. No, we're so sorry. We're going to bribe you to come here. John Scavarla, the Commerce Secretary, formerly of Diener, and Pat McCrory seem to be hell-bent on giving money away. I will call your attention, Governor, and Commerce Secretary Scavarla, do your study on history. Go look at Puerto Rico. Please go look at what incentives did to that. 40 years of incentives destroyed that island nation, and they're not going to do you much. If you want to, drive down to Lee County, where the economic development morons over the past 20 years in Lee County pursued manufacturing job after manufacturing job, and in 100% of the instances, the companies either closed up shop, shut down, or laid off people. There's millions of square feet of space down there in Lee County. It used to be the manufacturing leader of North Carolina. Go all over the state and look at where this pursuit of incentives has led you. It is a fool's errand. Governor, known you for a long time. Respect the office you have achieved, and you won. And you may yet win a second term. But don't believe for a minute that being ashamed of North Carolina is something to be proud of. I wish you were prouder of our state. I wish you would quit apologizing through the use of incentives. But so you made it known that's what you want. You want the incentives. And you want $2.85 billion in new spending for bonds. You want it to be on the ballot. So we'll see. It's hit a roadblock. The Senate's probably not going to do that. But we'll see. He used it as an opportunity to make his perspective known. Now, a minute, much more to discuss. We will have on at 3:30 Francis DeLuca. He is the president of the Civitas Institute. We had a luncheon today. Civitas does this with regularity, where they do a poll luncheon. They sample Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, and moderates, not necessarily connected to party. So they sample them on a wide variety of topics, and it gives you a snapshot of how people feel at that particular instant. How popular is your governor? How popular is the attorney general? How popular is the president? What are people thinking? Is North Carolina headed in the right direction, wrong direction? Do people believe that a recession is still going on? And if they do believe it, what do they think that means? How long do they think it'll take before we come out of it? Lots of questions to be answered. And we have those results. I have them right here in my hands. I have them. I had to speak about them today at lunch in front of a crowd. And another fascinating thing that we will talk about is when we polled the crowd. So in other words, we got to some of the questions, and rather than show the question and the answer, we asked the audience the question. And it was fascinating because, again, that's a live poll. And so people are affected by what other people do, raising their hands or not raising their hands. And some of those were interesting, too. We will have that discussion with Francis DeLuca all about the poll. You're going to hear it here first. I mean, there's a press release, but you didn't see it in print yet. You're going to hear it nowhere else for here. You're going to hear it first. So call your friends, tell them. Here on freedomactionnetwork.com, the Institute of Rational Thought, Chad Adams, What Matters? Stay tuned, much more to go. Good afternoon, rolling on. We will get to the poll luncheon at the bottom of the hour. Francis DeLuca joining us at that time, talking about this. We'll talk about it, and if the conversation rolls long, well, we'll just lock the doors and not let Francis out of the studio here inside his own building. So that would be fun to do, just keep Francis from leaving the room as we interrogate him about his poll, what it means, what it doesn't mean, what are the implications. And a lot of it's just kind of fascinating. So anyway, a couple other things. Two small stories that aren't real huge, but they are interesting. Because if you've never met the governor, many of you may have, one of the most likable people. He really is a super nice guy. But you don't find that politically, I don't know that he connects dots politically from a partisan standpoint at all or from a philosophical standpoint. I mean, he certainly has a big city mayor attitude about things. And you'll see that come out on the sales tax redistribution. He thinks that it should be left largely the way it is, where the cities get to keep most of the money. He doesn't want it going to the rural counties. You find that he's much more moderate in a lot of approaches on fiscal things. You saw with the Supreme Court ruling his kind of very soft approach on social issues. He's much more moderate on social issues where he doesn't want to get into. He certainly didn't want to get into the religious freedom bill. He certainly doesn't want to get into the gay marriage situation. He often says, well, here's what I believe, but I'm going to support the law. And he kind of backpedals away from that stuff. But he sometimes weighs in on things that you wonder why he weighs in, because it doesn't show the kind of consistency that, and that's what makes a lot of people scratch their heads. People in the media that I've spoken to, they don't know how he feels about a lot of issues. Folks in conservative rank and file get the dander up because he's made many appointments of Democrats across the state on boards and commissions, and kept many Democrat appointees in his administration, much to the chagrin of many Republican activists. So people don't really know where he's coming from on stuff. One of those that happened last week was on the heels of what happened in South Carolina. The governor decided, hey, look, we need to get rid of these Sons of the Confederacy license tags. Now, you've heard that discussed here on this show, but he really made a point, hey, we need to get rid of it. He kind of threw the ball over to the legislature, to which Phil Berger quite appropriately said, hey, governor, you're in the executive branch. You want to get rid of them? Get rid of them. It's your DMV. They issue the tags. We don't think this has anything to do with us. And so has the governor. I don't know if the governor's taken any action on that. I know that as a result of the governor stepping into that, there are about 2,000 license tags in a state of 9 million people, why he made that a big issue. But it certainly has created consternation and confusion. People, and now the news media loves to run these stories about people sticking Confederate flags in their pickup trucks and driving around the street, potentially, confrontations that could happen. There's any number of things. It certainly creates issues that otherwise and heretofore did not exist. Now, be that as it may, the governor finds himself in a very interesting crossroads, because as I was just thinking about this, what was the governor's role? How did he feel about this before the South Carolina incident? Because just recently, I don't know if you, in March 19th through 21st of 1865, the Battle of Bentonville took place. It was a full-scale action, civil war, in which the Confederate Army was able to mount a tactical offensive. The major battle, the largest ever fought on North Carolina soil, was the only significant attempt to defeat General William T. Sherman during its march throughout the Carolinas in spring of 1865. It's a huge deal. McCrory, the governor, went there in March, spoke there. And I'm sure, amongst the 3,500 reenactors, there were a lot of Sons of the Confederacy there. I'm sure there were Confederate flags flying at the reenactment of the Battle of Bentonville. He was there, very proud of the fact that the state had spent money to preserve and purchase this acreage. Since 1990, when the Civil War Trust first purchased 7.24 acres in the heart of the Bentonville battlefield, the trust has partnered with the North Carolina Department of Cultural Resources, under Commerce, to add more than 1,700 acres of historic farmland to the state historic site. $2.8 million in land acquisition at Bentonville made preservation of those 1,700 acres possible. North Carolina. Most recently, the McCrory administration contributed to the preservation at Bentonville a $183,000 grant from the Department of Cultural Resources and the Department of Environment and Natural Resources Clean Water Management Trust Fund, which, by the way, most Republicans would have gotten rid of, but we kept, to add a further 72.7 acres of battlefield land to the state historic site. So he made many statements. He was there about preserving this Civil War battlefield. Very interesting. So in just 90 days later, the governor wants to get rid of the tags, many of those reenactors. And 30,000 people went there, 3,500 reenactors. This is a big deal in central North Carolina, the Bentonville battlefield, to which the state, I wonder if this governor will say, you know what, we need to stop giving money to preserve these battlefields. Maybe the governor will come out and say we need to get rid of Confederate statues, like the one on the state grounds. But if you hadn't said what he said about these tags, and he could have silently just said, it's time for us to get rid of a lot of tags. He didn't have to go and go into a very divisive issue. He could have just said, why don't we just start, you know, hey, we don't need University of Michigan tags on our on the North Carolina plate or Florida, or we don't have to be part of the Rocky Mountain elk, shooting hunting club on our plates. We don't need these plates. But that's not what he did. What he instead did is, I think it's time we get rid of these plates. After speaking at the Battle of Bentonville and to the hurrahs of people who reenacted this stuff and talking about the preservation of a Civil War battlefield. Yes, they are connected. No, this is not crazy. It's a legitimate discussion about consistency with respect to the executive branch of government. That's all. It's not meant to be mean or disrespectful. Just very, very interesting perspective. Now, the voter ID, we asked just off the record. This was fun in the room, so 60-some-odd people, and our wonderful producer, Lisa, was in the back of the room out there. I don't know, were you there when we started asking polling the audit? Because she had to come back and take care of a lot of stuff here. But we started asking about the voter ID because we have discussed it on the show. And by the way, thanks to the folks who were at the luncheon that are regular listeners to this show. And I very much appreciate that. And I need to get in the chat room. Apologies to the folks in the chat room. I haven't been in there today. I will get in there. But we asked a question and we said, how many of you, well, let me preface this. David Lewis and the folks at the House, when they changed the voter ID law, said, hey, we heard at these public hearings that we needed a hardship exclusion. So we needed a way to get away from the photo ID, and it was an idea we heard about. I said, so that was what we heard. That's what has been reported. That is what they have stood by. But we know that from many letters in the story we broke on this show that's now being acknowledged even at WRL, that there's also the truth that DMV and somebody at DMV was responsible for charging people for what should have been otherwise free IDs. So those people were charged. And that really precipitated, because there were affidavits, affidavit Lewis. There were people that were presenting these affidavits in the court case, and they knew, the Republicans knew they were in trouble, so they backtracked and got rid of the photo ID for the most part. They did not, and then they went on to tell everyone they strengthened the photo ID, that the voter ID law has now been strengthened. So we just asked the audience, okay, audience, do you believe that this move, this change to the law, strengthened the voter ID law? One or two hands went up out of over 60. So, then the next question was, do you believe the line that the House told us, do you believe what the House told you, that it was about what you saw in public hearings, or do you believe it was about a screw-up at DMV that really jeopardized the entire case? Unanimous that it was that they're not being honest with us, that the House leadership has not been honest with the public. Unanimous. Nobody believes the story that David Lewis is telling folks. Continues to try to tell it, but everybody has heard enough now that people have talked about this. And it's a problem. Now, another funny story, Lady Liberty, great blog. It's because WRAL talked about the voter ID law. They quoted someone named Charisse Dill, 25 of Henderson County, that said she was twice refused photo IDs at DMV offices. She said she was working two jobs and unable to get and couldn't afford an ID. Terrible experience. Tough, tough, tough. But what the AP, the Associated Press, missed, and this is the funny part of the story, she was apparently arrested in South Carolina for shoplifting. So there is an ID from mugshots.com. So she could have used that photo ID and just had it printed, and that proved who she was. So apparently the folks at WRAL couldn't even do a Google search on the people they quoted. And she also works for Walmart, apparently, still works in retail. So couldn't find the time to go get an ID, but has one in the criminal record search. I just thought it was fascinating. And she's registered to vote, by the way, at the NC State Board of Elections, voter registration in Hendersonville. And it took a blogger. It took a blogger to do 2 minutes of extra work on a story that WRAL posted. So this is not going to be resolved easily. But when we return, we will be speaking with Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute about the poll. Your calls also welcome, 919-747-9421. Love to hear from you anywhere in the state, 919-747-9421. Much more to go. Stay tuned to What Matters with Chad Adams. Welcome back. Heading toward the top of the first hour. Glad to have you with us here. What Matters with Chad Adams. Mixlr.com. More being added, by the way. We're adding, working on stuff. Lisa has been doing it. Lisa and Mike have been doing a bang-up job of adding some versatility. We're trying to make it ever easier for folks and folks that are trying to join us from different formats and different ways of getting here. Always nccivitas.org, you can get there. You can also get there with freedomactionnetwork.com through Mixlr. So it's three. We're working on more ways each and every day to expand your opportunity to be a part of the broadcast. So anyway, with us right now, Francis DeLuca, president of the Civitas Institute, fresh off the press, the poll. The monthly, is it a monthly poll? But I mean, looks like you quote a number of things here. So is it from, is it every month or every couple of months?
No, it's pretty much every month. We average about once, probably I would say 10 a year. You know, when you take a little time out for Christmas and, we'll be, so it averages about one in every month and a half, would say.
Good crowd today. And I enjoyed it. As we were heading into this segment, I was talking about, some of the off, just polling we did of the people in the room, which is not scientific, not accurate, and subject to peer pressure. I don't want to raise my hand if they don't raise their hand. But it was interesting, and the feedback was interesting. So let's kind of kick things off. Before we start, were there anything, when you were, you ask a lot of similar questions, right track, wrong track, and without getting into too much detail, because we'll get into that as we go through it, was there anything that really surprised you in this poll as we went through it?
Actually, not a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a pretty, because we do this so much, the numbers really don't vary a lot. And I should thank you for having me on your show again, Chad. Thank you. And
you had me at lunch today, so at least I can do to pay you back.
That's right. That's right. Well, you scratch my back, I'll scratch
you. There you go.
But it did, and we'll see if it's a trend, but we ask that question every month about liberal, moderate, or conservative. And we had a pretty big spike in the number of people describing themselves as conservative and a corresponding big drop in the people describing themselves as moderate. And again, on a snapshot, it's hard to say what was it that caused that.
Right.
But that was probably the biggest surprise inside here that I saw was that, pretty big drop of outside the margin of error of people describing themselves, self-described moderates, yet the people self-describing as conservative, which went up to 47% on the conservatives and down to 24% on moderate, the same as liberals. And I mean, we haven't seen that. So.
And yet the fastest growing segment of the electorate
is unaffiliated, which is
unaffiliated,
different.
Which is, again, but people don't think. This is, we often have talked on this show and in speeches I've given, being a Republican or Democrat or unaffiliated is not necessarily linked to being a conservative, a moderate, or a liberal.
Right.
And so many times when we see actions by politicians, we go, well, they're a Republican. How did they vote that way? Well, that doesn't mean they're conservative. In fact, the House is very moderate.
Well, and just like Democrats are not all uniformly liberal. In fact, in North Carolina, for years, the majority of conservatives were actually in the Democratic Party.
They were fiscally conservative Democrats, Southern Democrats.
Yeah, the old Jessicrats, fiscally, socially conservative. And to an extent, there still is a fairly big chunk, because remember, Democrats are still the largest individual group of voters in North Carolina.
Now, another thing you mentioned about that, and again, we have a lot of poll data, but this is fun. This is the setup to the poll, is that we are continuing to see a trend of more people registering unaffiliated. So talk a little bit about that. You mentioned some stats, statistics today about that I think are interesting.
Well, it's just we do see constant registration, actually, of terms of new registrants. More people are registering as unaffiliated than either Republican, Democrat, or I guess we should also add Libertarian.
Right.
Libertarian is still kind of an asterisk mark in terms of registration.
Right.
So what we're seeing in a number of counties is unaffiliated taking over the registration of either one or both the major parties.
I mean, they're the most, if you look at the registrations, unaffiliated, they're more unaffiliated than certain political parties in some parts of the state.
Right. And I think down in one of your area haunts, Brunswick County, I believe unaffiliated has surpassed maybe both, at least Democrat, on the registration.
And we see this trend line continuing. And in the next couple of years, we're likely to see unaffiliated voters eclipse
Republicans in North Carolina.
Certainly.
And if it keeps going, they'll eclipse both parties. But they'll definitely eclipse Republicans because—
Why do you think that is? I mean, part of me says a pox on both their houses. That's what some people are like, look, I don't want to be affiliated with any group. I'll vote for whoever the heck I want to. And since I can vote in either primary, I can punish or help whoever I want to as well.
You just saved me a lot of words.
Did I? Yeah. I saved you a lot of words. I did on-air editing there, right?
Yeah, basically, you got it. I mean, why register?
What's the advantage to registering one or the other?
In North Carolina, there is no advantage to registering in either party because you can vote in, you can make your choice at election time of which party you vote in.
Do you think there are any impacts for the parties themselves at the state level as this continues? Because, I mean, they're all trying to get those, they're trying to get votes, they're trying to get people to care. But I mean, from mailing lists to, you know, events to, you know, the where you get the money from. Do you think there's any implications there?
Now, it makes it much harder to track who actually is part. Yep. Now, in terms of participation in party activities, you can't participate if you're not registered
you're
in
not
that party.
You're not supposed to.
Yeah, you're not supposed to.
Right.
And you can't participate. There also are some appointed bodies that you have to be of one party or the other. That's how they assign people. It's kind of like being on a board of elections. You have to be either Democrat or Republican. You can't get appointed as an unaffiliated.
Do you see a time when unaffiliated people start running for office more?
Yes, I do.
That's what I think's next. I think, you know, people are going to look at those roles and say, you know what? That they're going to run on this independent, you know, I'm an independent thinker. I'm not affiliated to this. I don't owe them allegiance. I'm your guy or gal.
And people who are opposed to all the election changes Republicans make should mm-hmm. thank them, because by taking away straight ticket voting, they've made that much more easy.
A much easier. You can get on the ballot. You can be on the ballot in November. You don't even have to face a primary if you're unaffiliated, do you?
Well, that's interesting. No, you would be running.
You can have five unaffiliated voters. There's no primary for the unaffiliated representation. You can nope. If you want to be on the ballot in November, you be unaffiliated, you'll be on the ballot.
That might be an election law change down the road.
Oh, I just gave them an idea. God forbid I gave them an idea that they may. No, they won't, because it's probably a good
but
idea.
You make
sorry,
a good,
that was awful.
You make a good point. I might not be able to survive through a primary, but I can get the
Will of the people on my side.
I can get the signatures to get me on it straight, mm-hmm. straight onto the general election ballot.
Now, on to the poll itself. We've got a lot of information to cover that I think people will. And you're hearing it here first. Has the press release already gone out?
We have done some press releases, but this will be the first time we cover it.
People will hear it. It's probably not in print yet. I didn't see anything covered on it. Now, first, let's look at the first. And how many people? Give us the details on how many people and when it was in the field.
The boring details. It was in the field June 23rd through 25th. So last week, not even a week ago, that would be Tuesday through Thursday. And it is of 600 registered voters, and these are how we select our voters. They had to vote in 2012 or 2014 or been registered to vote since the 2014 election. That means these are likely voters, especially going into a presidential year. They're more likely voters. We try and screen for likely voters as opposed to all voters and as opposed to all adults. We don't call everybody, and it's a live caller poll. And 30% of those 600 calls we made were cell phone only. These were people who only
we're seeing
have,
this change. This is something that's a dramatic change.
Right. And it's a little hard with cell phone. It's harder. It's more expensive. But in the state of North Carolina right now, I want to say we're approaching like 40 to 50% of the phones.
Sure.
Nobody has landlines.
Well, some people have them.
Yeah.
But they're kind of anachronistic.
You have a landline.
I do.
I have a landline.
Only because it was a really cool number I didn't want to give up.
No, from, only you know, because we're old.
Now, don't say that. I really, you know,
look at him. They've
connected it to my internet. So there we go. It's just like $8 a month or something like that. But it's a really cool number. So that's why I kept it.
Okay. But
so
let's talk about some of the things. I think we should, you know, first talk about the governor.
You want to go there first. Okay. That's on down at page. Like, you want to go straight to McCrory. So
yeah, I want to go to the governor because
that's one of the more interesting slides when you broke out, you know, how people felt about it.
Well,
so go ahead. You're talking about the approval rating?
Let's talk about approval rating first, because that's his job as governor. And he's been pretty steady. We've got him at 51% approved, 39% disapproved. And he's been holding there.
He's been kind of trending up a little bit.
Right. It's a little uptrending, but you know, it's going to bounce around. And that's the beauty of what we do, because we see
it's
it every
snapshot.
Month. And he has been positive going all the way back to December of 2013. You know, some of the polls found him in trouble in the summer, and we were not in the field at the time doing polling in the summer of 13. But we have had him positive since January of 2014. So really, he's a year and a half, and he's widening the gap in terms of how his positive is viewed. We also ask about favorability. And what's interesting, so he's 51-39 in terms of his job approval. People think he's doing okay. he's actually 52-36 in terms of his favorability. And I believe you were talking about this earlier, too. I don't know if on the radio, but...
Yeah, we've mentioned on the radio. In polls, even done by the left that I've been privy to, people like him. I mean, he's a likable guy, which is, if you know him, he is. If you're ever around him, he's a very likable. You don't become governor by being an unlikable person.
But he's personable.
He's very affable. He's very friendly, gregarious. People like him, you know, charming, very avuncular in that way. I mean, he's just a very nice guy. And so that shows in polling data. When you, hey, do you like the guy? They like him. So the interesting thing, though, was when you looked at these approval numbers, you broke out some numbers. And this is what many on the conservative side say. This is what people have been saying, and now you're finding evidence of it in the polls.
Yeah, it's interesting is that both on the job approval and on the favorability ratings, I'll use the job approval numbers because I actually have them. Since the last time we polled this in February, his approval rating for his job performance went up 9% among liberal voters. Among moderate voters, it went down 2%, and among conservative voters, it went down 7%. But the uptick in his approval among liberal voters kind of canceled out his downtick among conservative
voters. So amongst conservatives, his approval numbers are dropping.
Job approval.
Job approval. And yet liberals are finding him more appealing. Now, job approval.
Now, yeah. When we look at his favorability ratings, interesting, liberals, again, are more favorable to him. But conservatives and moderates are less favorable to him. His favorabilities among conservative and moderates have dropped, but the number of liberals have offset that. You know.
Now, do you think that is, you know, again, politics is all about what people believe at any given point in time and your ability to move them in a given direction. And when you look at what McCrory is attempting to do, moving into the 2016 election, he's, in a way, is he just saying, is he taking his base for granted and saying they're going to vote for me anyway, so I want to pick up more of those moderate left-leaning votes from Cooper? Or is it just that maybe, you know, some of the decisions he's making are rankling conservatives and making him more acceptable to the left?
It's interesting. I'd say there's a couple things. I think some of his vetoes have made liberals happy.
Yes.
I think back to filing suit against the state, against the legislature, which has been in the news recently, liberals like that because to them the Republican legislature is the devil. They hate the Republican legislature probably more than they hate the Republican Congress in D.C. because
right.
It's near and dear to them. So... that's, I think you're seeing some uptick in his approval because of those things. Now, what a lot of people would probably say and people around would be, look, that's good for him. He needs to broaden his support.
Right.
The question at the end of the day you have to ask, will the liberals stay with him in an election or is this just their polling data?
You know, he's the governor that is, not the governor that could be.
Will liberal Democrats stay with him and vote for him because they say nice things about him in a poll or... Will he, you know,
alienate his base and think that those people on the left are going to support him when actually they're going to vote with their home team?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't know. Is Roy Cooper going to be able to? If Roy Cooper is the nominee, is Roy Cooper going to be able to bring those liberal homes? You know, nobody in North Carolina really has looked at Roy Cooper and said, "Oh, he is a liberal."
Well, let's look at you polled Roy Cooper's numbers.
Yeah,
the attorney general.
It's funny. That's what I'm looking for right now.
I've got
now.
His favorability. I've got the page number. That's page 6. If you want to look at Roy Cooper's, this is your poll. But page 6 is
okay,
where.
Okay, got it right here.
There you go. So what do you make of now? Again, Roy, the attorney general. There's several observations to make about this. Now he's been in politics for a very long time. Amongst those who know him, he's well known. But outside of certain groups of people, not many people know him. Tell us a little bit about him.
Favorability ratings. You know, he's a 38-17 favorable.
Almost a 2-1,
which is a good number.
Oh yeah, you want a 2-1.
But you know, so you got basically a little over half the people have some opinion.
55% of people
have some opinion of him, which is not a real good number when you've been in statewide office now for 14 years.
Right.
You know, very few people really know who Roy Cooper is. They don't have a real firm opinion. That means people could, you know. He could be defined. Now, the other question he asked, what kind of job is he doing? And he does better there. It's 41% approve his job, 18% disapprove. And I think a lot of that is because he's an attorney general, so they go, okay, the state seems pretty safe. It doesn't seem like much bad is happening. So a little better on the job approval numbers. Now, What's interesting is that's a pretty much across the board. Liberals, 46% approve of it. Moderates, 42%. Conservatives, 39%. So I would give that, you know, across the board.
I know there's not a big spread between what liberals and conservatives think of Cooper. And that will be interesting as we move into election mode. These two, from a political standpoint, aren't that far apart, at least from a public perception standpoint. Politically, ideologically, they don't seem to be that very far apart. It'll be interesting to see what shakes out. Now, we're going to take a break, quick one,
and
come
then,
back.
And then we'll come back and talk about the election.
We haven't talked about Cooper and McCrory Cooper. And other questions. Much more to go here.
So hang on through the break.
I know. It's called a tease. So you got to stay with us to find out what you really want to find out. Stay here. Much more to go on What Matters with Chad Adams. Continuing on our discussion with Francis DeLuca, the poll luncheon results. We have scratched the surface. There's so much more here. I'm hoping Francis will stick around because we can certainly go into the 4 o'clock hour. Also, an update on the same-sex marriage fight. Rowan County, Moorhead, Kentucky. I mean, they're all now, because a lot of judges and clerks in Alabama and Texas and other places, they say the laws say they may issue marriage license. And so many of them are interpreting it to say they may not issue marriage license. It is a choice, like North Carolina. So it's going to be interesting to see if the North Carolina law. We have a poll question along those lines.
And we can talk about that. But I want to talk about, because this is interesting, and you know, this is the whole constitutional question and everything. And I think that what the Supreme Court's done in a couple different cases is very concerning. It's not just a marriage, but
the National Supreme Court.
The ACA, their thing on housing, you know, they've made a number of decisions that has basically...
A lot of them in the past, 6 of them in the past 2 weeks.
Right, well, they were issuing the decisions for the whole term.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of these things have weakened our federal system. And our federal system is built on, you know, states doing certain things and the federal government, powers only reserved to the federal government.
Explicitly remember? Spelled out.
Those that aren't spelled out
are reserved for the state. 10th Amendment.
Right. And, you know, again, I haven't seen anything in the Constitution say anything about marriage.
Not a word.
No, the states have always mm-hmm. done the marriage thing. Number of things that they are turning on its head. Health insurance was never a federal responsibility. It's always been a state responsibility, and the federal government has stepped in and just stepped all over the states and everything. You talked about that marriage thing. Well, it's interesting. Does a state, and I know we fought a war over this and, you know, it was decided, but does a state get trumped by a bunch of guys on a Supreme Court, or are they right to say, look, when the Congress passes a bill and, you know, all this, then we'll listen to it, you know, but until such time as we're, you know, everybody agrees on it, can a state say, sorry?
They can. Absolutely they can. Look at Denver. Look at Colorado. Look at the drug law. I mean, it's a great example of them saying, okay, this is the federal law. We're going to pass our own law. And the federal government decides not to enforce it.
Right, right. And this is the troubling
aspect.
Are
they going to send marshals in to states that don't agree with
this? Does the federal government decide they'll just kind of arbitrarily pick and choose what laws they're
going to enforce?
And what laws they're going to demand states follow?
Sure.
Because you're exactly right. If you look at the pot in marriage, you got two kind of similar things, and they're treating them completely different.
I could see a great parody, you know, pot and marriage. Pot.
I think there was a movie.
Go
a
together.
TV show.
Like, yeah, it's like Married with Children, Married with Pot.
All right. So, well, let's talk about, speaking of pot marriage, let's talk about Roy Cooper and Pat McCrory. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
Yeah, you probably are. Now, Francis, you meant no inference to either one of them, but, you know, this is the biggest, at this point, non-race, because... remember, folks, Pat McCrory did not enter the race for governor until January of 2012. Now, much to the chagrin of the people on the right, they beat up on Roy Cooper for not entering the race yet. But he's probably not going to enter it till, you know, January of 2016. But we all know those two are going to be running. And, you know, at this point, what are people saying about this?
Well, I don't know if I'm so quick to say that Roy Cooper... Roy Cooper, a number of times has talked, you know, has been touted and talked about and everything, has never run. I always kind of say Roy Cooper, no disrespect, but he's the boy wonder, but he's been the boy wonder for about...
AG is not a trend. He's an aspiring governor.
Right. He's been boy wonder in the Democratic Party now for about 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you've been boy wonder for 30 years, you're no longer the boy wonder. You kind of...
It's Batman. So what's going to... I mean, all indications are the money he's raising, the statewide, you know,
more money than McCrory right now.
Right. And he's got a statewide infrastructure in place. He is experienced. He is not. And when McCrory ran in 2012, he ran against a very weak Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton. Bob Etheridge was out there. I mean, they had a little ugly primary, the Democrats did. Walter Dalton was not the candidate that Roy Cooper would be. Now, to boot, McCrory is going to be an experienced governor with 4 years under his belt. So he is not, you know, a former mayor of Charlotte. He is a sitting governor.
With a record.
With a record. Good or bad, it's going to be the record. And I think largely, you know, the governor's reelection chances don't hinge so much on his record as they do on the state of the economy at a given point.
Well, which is part of his record. And I think if you had to just take a snapshot of his record right this minute, it's a pretty good record to run on. Good on, because what people care about is unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
They care about the health of the economy, number of jobs being created.
Right.
They care about education. Are the school? I got to tell you, most people think the schools are operating fine. Their children?
No, they don't. Not according to your poll.
But that's the poll. But guess what?
Registered voters.
When they send their kids to school,
likely voters.
When they send their kids to school, the schools are open, the buses run. You know the.
Yep.
So for the
kids
most part, Kids get home. For most people, they're happy.
Right.
Their trash gets picked up. The police come when they call.
Nothing to do with the governor, but yes. Local government's functioning.
Everything's functioning. You know, the left and Roy Cooper probably think the world's falling apart. Most average people don't think the world's falling apart. So I say all that by way of Pat McCrory's in a lot better shape than the governor was when he ran in 2012.
Yes.
You know, Bev Perdue, if you look at unemployment, everything that was going on.
But still, Bev Perdue was able to win. She didn't run in 12.
Right.
McCrory ran against a little-known Democrat.
Right. In 2008, he ran against Bev Perdue, had been seeing. But the economy then was in a lot healthier shape in 2008 when he ran than it was in 2012. He took... The sitting governor got credit.
Yeah, we were heading into the horrible economic times rather than we were heading out of when...
Right.
Okay. So what does this mean for Cooper and McCrory right now? What are the folks, the likely voters, saying about these two?
All right. So everybody's been...
Drum roll. Everyone's waiting. They're like, oh my God, Chad,
just
please
give
tell
us the darn
numbers. Let me see if the chat room's beat up on us. No, they haven't.
Okay. Well, darn it. I was hoping they would, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got McCrory with 43% and Cooper with 38%. And this is of the registered voters. And definitely McCrory, 30%.
If the election were held today,
right.
43-38.
McCrory would win.
Right.
And definitely is 30-29 McCrory over Cooper. The definitely voters, they're about, you know, they each have their core set of voters. And so, you know.
But it's much tighter.
Where McCrory picks up is on the probably McCrory because he's got 13 and Cooper only has 9%. So,
but again, not as well known. This is going. I don't know that the numbers will change that dramatically. They'll just move closer to 100% of people because they'll start locking in. They'll learn more about them. People are going to obviously know a lot more about Roy Cooper by the time if he runs. I still think he will. It's too much money.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just say that by way of...
Now, you tested another candidate just for the heck, as we're heading to the top of the hour. Let's go. Well, I tell you, we're saved that. You're here at the top of the hour, and you tested another name.
Another well-known
North Carolina Democrat. We'll get the results of that. And I think it tells us a lot more about where people aren't than where they are. When we get the results of that on the other side of the break. We're going to take a break right now, continue our discussion in the second hour with Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute. We're going over all the poll data, a lot more poll data we haven't even talked about yet on issues, on where we're headed. Are we headed in the right track? Do people believe there's a recession going on? So much more. Stay tuned here to What Matters with Chad Adams. Much more to go. And rocking on with our second hour here, What Matters with Chad Adams. Chat room alive and well. It's funny, it's like the chat room this afternoon has been like one person will dominate it, and then no one says anything, and then another person will dominate it. Usually it's a conversation. Today it's kind of like monologues. They're like their own host out there in the chat room. So, We will see. Now, with us, Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute, president, just going over the poll numbers, the most recent poll data. You're not going to hear it anywhere else. You're going to hear it here first, and you may see some press coverage later, but here you're going to hear it. Now, when we were going to the break, we talked about the fact that McCrory's leading Roy Cooper right now. It hasn't changed a whole lot when you've tested this. Not a lot of change.
No, there's only been one poll, which goes by an unnamed pollster that we...
Yeah, you got criticized for quoting that poll at the luncheon.
Why are you giving them credit?
This showed Pat McCrory behind Roy Cooper, and I don't think that was a legitimate...
On any given snapshot, though, it's not a runaway. By any stretch, it's fairly close, right? No matter what.
These are the kind of numbers we've always
seen. These are snapshots. Yeah. And we're not near an election, so it's meaningless in a way. It's just fun. Now, you tested another name. Tell us about the other name and why you tested it.
Well, it's interesting. We actually tested this in two places, but was being talked about as a candidate for U.S. Senate, which we tested her, give away a hint, as a candidate also for governor, and that is Kay Hagan, who had been in the state Senate for a long time, ran, beat Elizabeth Dole, and then lost to Tom Tillis last year. So we tested
very well known, high name recognition. Yeah.
Yeah, we tested her earlier against Richard Burr in the poll, and she lost.
Right.
We don't, no big surprise
and,
there.
And subsequent to, prior to around that time, she also withdrew.
Right, and I'm thinking they had the same polling data we had that showed it would be a hard thing for her to win. So we tested her against Pat McCrory also because she has the credentials. She was budget. She did 10 years in state Senate, probably the best-known Democrat in North Carolina. And when we tested her head-to-head against Pat McCrory, McCrory won 44-37. So, it's actually a little less of a lead than he had against Roy Cooper. He beat Roy Cooper by 8 points. He was only up 7 points against Kay Hagan. But
not pulling far behind Cooper. I mean, 1 point.
Right. But on the when we test him against Hagan, it's interesting. Probably better known. People know where they know her from. The definitely McCrory was 37%. Hagan was actually more definitive voters than Cooper. She had 30%, where Cooper had 39%. So he was... The committed core was better for him against Hagan than it was against Cooper, and some of that is probably because of the Senate race and the negative ads ran against her, and they identified her with Barack Obama. And her negatives are probably higher than Roy Cooper's, too, because she's better known.
Right.
So, but all that said, she would be just as legitimate candidate against Roy Cooper and maybe a little stronger than against McCrory,
but McCrory would also stack up at a primary against Cooper quite well.
And that was a mistake. But yes, she would be as credible a candidate and maybe a little stronger than
Roy
Cooper.
Don't see that happening. See it happening. I think the conventional wisdom is Cooper's a guy. They're going to stick with it. I mean, Democrats seem to be better at avoiding primaries. They seem to be.
Well, they tend to be. I think they're higher. They're much more hierarchical. They tend to listen to people when people come talk to them. And I think Jim Hunt does a lot of that. He goes and talks to people and
he's still the godfather on the left.
From what I hear, yeah, he's out looking for people.
And a mentor to the current governor. I mean, McCrory has said that's his mentor and friend. And I've seen Governor Hunt go.
Be actually out recruiting people to run against him.
Ironically, I've seen him in the building, and he acts like he still owns it. So it's fascinating. Now, let's turn our attention to the right direction, right track, wrong track. This is something that you have looked at for a very long time. And how do the citizens feel about the direction the state is heading in?
Well, it's it's not the worst we've seen it. But it's 47% think we're heading on the wrong track, and only 39% think we're heading on the right direction.
So clearly, there's a lot of folks that are still not happy with it. Now, why do you think that doesn't play? I mean, I think that plays into where... So McCrory, on the one hand, people in general are good. Hey, the kids get home on time. The dogs are not killing the cats. Everything's okay. But this right track, wrong track, that's in the back of people's minds.
Well, part of this is it's a very political question. When we've been polling this since 2005, and one of the interesting things in 2005 compared to 2015, the numbers are almost the same. But when you look at the makeup of the audience, it's almost flipped. Back in 2005, Republicans were not so happy about the direction of the state because they knew it was controlled by Democrats, and Democrats.
So I didn't like it.
Democrats were happy about the direction of the state.
Because they owned it.
Well, and nobody real happy because it was negative.
Right.
2015, same thing. Now Democrats are very unhappy about the direction of the state because Republicans are in charge, And Republicans are more happy about the direction. So it's kind of interesting. Whereas we still have the same numbers, the people who make up those numbers are completely different.
So with respect to like a Vegas analogy, is this a push? I mean, it's much ado, you know, much ado about nothing. I mean, people are upset, but it's kind of a flip with respect to partisan. How do moderates feel about this?
And moderates are kind of split. You know, this is where they're
unaffiliated moderates.
Moderates, unaffiliated, and even moderates are kind of split in the middle. And the unaffiliated revert back to political types because even though they're unaffiliated, they still have allegiances. And so they revert back to type in terms of do they identify more with Democrats or more with Republicans. But, you know, the important thing for McCrory is that it looks like that the numbers will be, you know, when he gets ready for election, you know, if the numbers are
they tend to tighten up around election time.
Yeah, if the numbers are this or closer, he should be in pretty good shape.
Something so they should take heed. Now, let's go to the recession question. You ask a question about, you know, from a pure economic standpoint, you have to have two quarters of negative growth. We've been out of the recession for a very long time, but in the eyes of people have, this has become more of a psychological question than an actual question. And so go ahead with this. This is an interesting question. So go ahead and kind of tell us about it.
I got to say, of all the questions we ask this, since the recession, this has become my favorite question.
Why? Asking people stuff that's not true.
But people think it is.
I know. You're asking them a psychological question.
What we ask them is, thinking about the economy, in your opinion, how much longer do you think it will take for the economy to improve and the current recession to end? And as you said, we came out of this current recession, I believe, at the end of 2009 or beginning of 2010. I can't remember exactly, but they declared it. They declared it over years and years ago. But when we ask people, this month, 54% of the people thought, these are registered voters, thought that the recession would go on for at least another 2 years. Another 16% thought it would be a year to 2 years. So if you look at that,
a majority.
If you look, yeah, we're talking 70% of the voters think we're in a recession and it's not going to end for over a year.
How does that break down from a liberal, conservative, moderate standpoint?
A lot of it's across the board.
Now, see that, I keep telling you, or, you know, suggesting some numbers don't look good heading into an election. How does that number? I think your answer is going to be, well, Chad, they're looking at it from this is a reflection of federal feelings, not state feelings. So it's not going to hurt, you know, the guys here in North Carolina. This is more of an impactful statement with respect to the national electorate.
Yeah. And this is one of the things when I saw these numbers leading into the 2012 and 14 election, I did not think Barack Obama would win North Carolina because of these numbers. And in 2014, I didn't think Kay Hagan would win re-election because you're right. This is more of a national look. People don't really think of the state of recessions and everything as state specific. I think they look on that as national. So, to me, it's a look at how people are thinking about where our country's headed. And they're very concerned.
I think that the electorate, and this is in my humble opinion, I think the electorate is very split in many ways, on many issues, across many lines. And there's just not a general sense of overall happiness. There's a lot of discomfort with folks in older generation. When I speak to my father, you know, his concerns are about the economy, the direction things are going in, the future of his kids. You know, he doesn't see the country the same way he saw it 20 years ago or 30 years ago. He sees it much more jaded. I don't remember that being the case with my grandparents when I was much younger and they were at similar age. It looks like there's much more concern about the downfall of the country that we're seeing reflected in more polling data.
Well, if you can remember back when you were in your 20s, you had your whole life before you and you were pretty optimistic about the future.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Not like you and me now.
Jaded and aware and yeah.
No, but
you, in general, people were. I'm just saying.
I'm getting to a point.
Okay, go ahead.
But yes. So you were optimistic.
I still am.
Someone,
not as much about the country.
What we
as
see
I was,
about
though.
Young people back then or now is that they're not optimistic.
Right.
So this is not just an old people thing. This is
across the board.
Across the board, young people are very worried.
They do not feel they're going to have as good a quality of life as their parents.
Right. And their parents don't feel they're going to. This is the first time in polling that parents don't think their kids will have a better life than them. So that is an important psychological thing. I mean, it's bad for the fabric of the country, too, because when people are negative, they tend to accept things that they wouldn't normally accept.
Right.
It's like, oh, you know, you hate to say this. This is when people can, you know, demagogues can rise up and, you know, take advantage of people's fear and worry to kind of do things that you normally wouldn't have happen.
And we've got some fairly divisive things happening out there with the backdrop of skin color in some of them. And liberal left, right on social issues. Let's look at this marriage issue. The backdrop of what happened with the Supreme Court last week, this poll was in the field prior to that ruling coming out about gay marriage. And so Thursday evening, this poll wrapped up prior to the Friday morning when the world changed on this issue. And I think when you poll it a month or two from now, it will change significantly, although it's been consistent for a long time. Tell us about how people in North Carolina feel about the issue of gay marriage.
Well, it's interesting.
And they have for a long time.
And it kind of follows along, and we ask slightly changing the question, but it's the same basic concept. Do you support the state constitution which defines marriage as an act between one man and one woman? And when we asked that, 64% said yes, 31% said no. So,
and that's across the board. I mean, Democrats, conservatives, moderates, liberals.
Yeah, the only number there that really jumped out about me, you know, you keep hearing about young people, that mm-hmm. young people are, it's a fundamental shift. Well, young men were only 49% of support. They weren't, a lesser number were opposed. It wasn't 43 or anything. It was in the 30, it was lower. But 55% of young women, 18 to 25%, said they were opposed.
Childbearing age.
So there would not, it was not, you know, the generational shift in North Carolina is not as clear cut as all I'm saying about
right.
that. And we'll see now if it changes based on that. But among the traditional things you would think, GOP people are 88% in support. Democrats, 55% in the support.
And see, most people, you would not think that based on what you're reading in the media.
No.
That and this is where I think the left, this small segment, overplays its hand with much success, I might add. They're very successful at this.
And then black voters, 67% are in support of this Constitution.
And I've read a number of things that a lot of black voters are upset that the civil rights movement was being used as a justification for the changing of the marriage laws.
And this goes,
they don't like being connected to those.
And see, if you just read the papers or watch TV, you think that that opinion is passe and it's over with. And as they like to say, you're on the wrong side of history. But the numbers don't add up to that. They may. I'm not saying the next time we poll this, we may not see a earthquake, you know, a real shift in North Carolina. We'll know in a couple months because we'll poll it probably in September. Won't poll it in August because in August we do our yearly unaffiliated
right.
poll. So people should
coming up soon.
Yeah, our yearly unaffiliated poll.
Now we're going to take a break. We come back, wrap up this thing about marriage, but also what citizens had to say about education. This state, you know, you would think every party and every politician is falling over his or herself to be the one that solves or creates some kind of new educational endeavor, does something, but not, how do people feel about the state of education and public education in our state? We'll continue our discussion with Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute after this. Stay tuned. Just scooting along, having so much fun on a beautiful, beautiful, what is it? Is today Tuesday? Tuesday afternoon, last day of June, final day of June 2015. We made it halfway mark through the year. You've made it through the longest day of the year. Today will be, you're going to feel a little strange today because we're officially enacting a leap second. So the day's a little bit longer than 24 hours.
That's why I'm so tired today.
That's where I have that extra second to deal with. So the atomic clock's being brought in line, I think, this evening. So we have an atomic leap second to celebrate. Just the longest day. So longest actual daylight was on the 21st, but the longest actual day pretty much in your life is today. Longest day of your human existence is today.
I thought the longest day of human existence was the last 2 minutes of Dean Smith.
Only a Carolina fan could think that way. Did that happen?
Yeah, you know, that's
I figured the longest day was when NC State actually, you know, wins a game against, and it's like time stops because it just never happens.
Well, that's what they said, always said.
I'm a State fan.
If you only had 5 minutes to live, who do you want to spend it with?
There's no way you would say Dean Smith.
Dean Smith, because he can make 5 minutes last forever.
Oh, okay. That's just great.
May he rest in peace.
Jeez. Sorry, audience. I couldn't swallow that one. Honestly, I couldn't swallow that one. Now, moving on ahead, back to stuff that actually matters, hence the title of the show, What Matters. We're talking about, you know, the marriage. Where do you think we go with marriage? I mean, now we do have still the law of the land is if you have a religious objection, magistrates don't have to marry. What happens to that law in light of what the Supreme Court did? Does it go away or does it stick around?
The previous numbers we had talked about were the 64-31 overall support for the marriage.
Across everything.
Right. Well, we asked a question that do you think state government officials, such as registered deeds, blah, 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 should have to be compelled to perform and certify same-sex marriages, even if it clearly violates an individual religious convictions? And again, when we polled them, 63% of the respondents said no, 31% said yes. Now, there were some differences in this one. Liberals, who actually supported the current constitution, they said yes, 56-37. So, you know, they did not think that they should be able to opt out of it. Dems overall, Democrats, 56-36 said no. So they are not out of the mainstream in terms of the larger voting public. And blacks said 66-26 no. So
what happens though? Okay, that's how people feel. Clearly, the people of North Carolina. I think here's two statements I like. One, Tillis predicted this last year that he thought it would be many years hence.
He was a little short.
He thought it'd be like in 20 years we won't have this discussion. Little did he know, less than a year after he's in office, this has already been dealt with. I think that North Carolinians are going to look at what happened with the federal court, and it's going to become, because most people are not involved politically. They're, you know, they have opinions, they think things, but I think they're going to be very accepting of this. There will be no backlash. I mean, if they'll say it's the law of the land, then in a year from now, I think those numbers will flip. What do you think?
I don't know if the numbers will flip. I think we're still a fairly culturally conservative state, even with all the newcomers. I mean, I think this polling bears that out. Now, will there be some mass resistance? I don't think so. I think you're just going to see the numbers may slowly trend, or it could be like abortion, where the numbers initially after the abortion decision went way in favor of abortion.
Right.
They were very heavily pro-choice versus pro-life. Now those numbers have flip-flopped, and you actually have a larger pro-choice, a pro-life cohort.
Right.
So we'll see if that's where this goes. We won't know until we see it over time.
This is a golden opportunity for people to say, let's get government out of this.
Well, I mean,
I think that if the Republicans wanted to make this an issue, they could say, let's get government out of this issue. Let the religious institutions recognize marriage. Let it stay there. And the government can just recognize, you know, domestic partnerships.
Or contracts.
And also polygamy is going to be a next. There's no way you can discriminate against three or four because you've thrown out sexual orientation. You've thrown out the, you know, central nuclear family. Polygamy's got to be another discussion.
Well, that's where some people think it will lead. You know, there's other people have different views of that.
Sure.
But, you know, no, I tend to agree. I thought, you know, the Senate Bill 2 was wrong because it protected government people but didn't protect private people. I think you're right. We should get government as far out of marriage as we can. Leave it to the to churches, religious, or to individuals to contract with each other. Some accommodations have to be made because we have a whole set of laws and tax structure built around the family unit, so we've got to transition that over.
Does the magistrate law survive?
I do not think it does under the current court.
So in other words, your opinion is that once this stuff is ratified and finds its way into state law, well, it's federal law trumping state law, it kills the magistrate bill too. So magistrates, regardless of how they feel, will be forced to perform marriages.
And I think at the end of the day, that will happen. Not saying I agree with that, but I think at the end of the day, that will happen. And it will be because you can find a federal judge to declare this unconstitutional based on the...
Especially Ninth Circuit.
Well, or no, North Carolina, you can find a federal judge, especially based on the recent ruling on marriage period. I think they will find some judges to throw out the North Carolina law.
Fascinating. You heard it here first, folks. I would love to disagree with Francis, but I believe that's exactly what's going to happen. Let's turn our attention to schools. Vast majority of the state budget goes to education. The continuing resolution went out of its way, that the House leadership went out of its way to point out everything great about education that they're going to fund in the continuing resolution as they couldn't get their job done as 40 states in the union passed their budget already. North Carolina, one of 10, was unable to, even though it's all Republican. You'd think they could. That's the one job they're supposed to do, and they could not do that job. So do say, you know, do tell me, what's the situation with the state of schools in our state? What do people think about how wonderful our public schools are in North Carolina?
Well, we asked a series of education questions, but we asked some specifically on what they thought about school systems. We said, how would you rate North Carolina public school system? And that's the whole thing. That's not at their school. That's all. And what they said was 58% of them gave a fair or poor grade, where 37% gave an excellent or good grade. You know, so you could say overall they thought they were okay. You know, the poor, 26% of them graded it poor, 4% graded it excellent. So you do have a lot more people are saying poor than excellent. But overall, you know,
they're not happy with this.
No, they're not.
I mean, we're throwing more money than ever at schools, and yet the people are saying,
yeah,
we don't think the schools are all that great in North Carolina.
And as we were talking about at lunch, this could be, you brought this up, about the new grading system, that seeing these ABCs and everything
didn't help the schools.
It's a lot more transparent than it used to be.
Yeah.
And so that may be some of it. Also, you got to look at the politics of it, and Republicans are now more supportive of schools than they used to be. Where
throwing money at it, that doesn't mean it's supporting schools.
When I say supportive, I'm talking voters.
Yes, yes.
Democrats are a little more leery to say schools are doing a good job, where they used to be more likely to say schools were doing a good job.
But doesn't this also, aren't people saying, you know, wait, we've had years, we've had educational governors, we've had 20 years of people throwing more and more money at education. And here we have the public. What was that number again? They're dissatisfied with it?
If you talk about
fair, I mean poor.
Poor, a quarter of the voters, 26%. That's a pretty big chunk of people thought the schools were poor. You know, you've got, and only 4% thought they were excellent. Think about that.
Only 4%. So 96% of voters do not feel our schools are excellent.
Right.
That's staggering.
That's everybody. You know,
that means, you know, for them falling over themselves, the educational establishment is not as well thought of in this state as people want to believe they are. I mean, they're trying to sit here and say that the people love. I think it's like this. I think schools are very much like your local politician. They think schools are terrible, but they like their school.
Well, and we didn't ask that specifically, but we've asked in the past, and there is a difference. It's not as clear as you might think, though, in terms of their local school versus their the general school system. Also, you got to remember, there are a lot more kids do alternative kind of schools. They go to public charter, they go to private, they
and you homeschool. Have that. You asked that question as well about private and charter.
Right. We asked what they would do, and that has changed a lot. What we did is we asked if it were your decision, you could select any type of school.
In other words, you could send your kid to a charter school, a private school, homeschool them, or a public school.
Right. And we gave them those four choices.
It didn't talk about cost. It said, where would you like to send your kids?
Right. And 34% of them said public school, which is down from what it used to be, while 31% said private school. And the big increase, or what we see as a bigger increase, 19% said charter, and then 8% homeschool and a 1% virtual.
So if you add the private schools and the charter school numbers, you're at roughly 50%.
And if you throw in the home, you're well over, you're in the 60s.
If you get away from the government-run schools, only 34% of people, when given a total choice, would have picked the public schools.
And you can actually see that here in Wake County. 18% of the people in Wake County send their kids to something other than traditional
public.
That's
one in five, roughly.
Right.
We need to take a break. We're going to come back. What does this all mean? Okay, we've got all the numbers. We've gone through stuff. What the heck do it all mean? We will talk about that here on What Matters with Chad Adams with Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute. Stay tuned. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Heading toward the top of the second hour with Francis DeLuca of the Civitas Institute. We have gone through the details, the poll. You can hear it now. What's beautiful is now we've added podcasting to our repertoire. So not only do you get to hear the show if you listen here live, but podcasts are being put up there. So you can go to a specific show and listen to, maybe you missed something today. Maybe you missed it last Friday when the marriage definition came down from the federal courts and we had a lengthy discussion about that. So you can actually go, and we continue to add versatility and components. Long way from where I envisioned this project, but we are certainly moving in the direction that I envisioned when we set this all up with the blessing of our guest, Francis DeLuca. Now, you're looking at this poll. It's June 2015. There is no election looming. There isn't even a bond. I mean, much to the chagrin of the governor who desperately wants a bond referendum out there for people. I don't see the Senate. I don't see the House jumping on board. I don't see anyone falling over themselves to put a bond on the ballot. I'll ask you that. What do you think is going to happen there? I mean, $2.85 billion, $1.4 billion. The governor really wants a bond out there. What do you think is going to happen? I just don't see them jumping over to make it happen.
Other than elected officials, I don't see, and when I say elected, I'm talking about local elected officials who think they'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
I don't see
it'll happen in their district.
I don't see a huge grassroots swell for this bond.
I mean, the governor's put a lot of political capital into trying to get people to jump on this. I've seen a few groups that will get something out of it jump on, but I don't see. I mean, he's lost leverage with the legislature. He can't send his army of legislative liaisons down there. It doesn't seem to be accomplishing anything. So now he's trying to do it from the grassroots level.
Well, what's really interesting, I think they viewed that the road bond would have the more support in the infrastructure bond, where they'd have to build support. It's been the opposite in the legislature. There's more support for the education,
yep. Yeah.
The infrastructure bond.
Which surprised me.
Than the roads, because part of it is the Senate feels they figured out a way of funding the road building by basically doing the bond in the pay-as-you-go way over a couple years and not having to put themselves in debt to do it. So that's one of the reasons they're not doing that.
And one of the most contentious situations related to transportation is in an area where the state is most populated, and that is in the Mecklenburg corridor. There is, and again, I'm going to defer to you on this because I'm getting many people that are texting me, that are emailing me, that have even referred to it in the chat room about this I-77 toll issue. And it would appear that the toll is kind of a backlash. There's a backlash against those in elected office because of what's happening with the toll. Help me understand this, because I don't think this I-77 toll road issue in one of the most populated areas of the state is helping make people feel more comfortable about the bond. Am I missing something?
I think you're right about that. I think you're,
even though I don't know what the issue
it's
is,
undermining
it
support.
It's undermining support.
Now, and the other thing, and you and I are both very much supporters of toll roads.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's because you can choose to go on that road or not.
Right. But in this case, you know, what we would say is that if you have someone who will build a toll road or a toll bridge and spend all the money and get all the revenue, correct? That's how you view a toll road. That's how I view. What we have in North Carolina is we have taken the idea of a toll road and kind of turned it into something. I would use a word, but we have perverted the ideal of a toll road. What we now call a toll road is where the state gives a company money to build the road and then get revenue off it.
Right.
Now, they're not paying for 100% of that road, but they're paying for a chunk, and they're also guaranteeing a revenue stream
for that company.
For that company. In the case of Wake County, I-540, we're spending $1 billion over the life of the road to subsidize that road. It's a private toll road run by an authority. In Mecklenburg County, we're going to spend a couple $100 million for adding two toll lanes.
Okay.
And so that's not a private toll road anymore. That is a public-private partnership funded by taxpayers.
Okay.
So the company who's doing it kind of, it's a heads we win, tails we win.
It's an ugly situation. What I see, just looking at this from afar, is this is gaining momentum as a big bad problem in that part of the state. I mean, the citizens that are involved, there are more and more people, a lot of libertarian-related folks that are involved in this, a lot of property rights people that are involved. I mean,
libertarians who would normally be in support of toll roads.
Yes, the coalition against this toll road has grown and grown and grown. And you have to wonder where this is going to go.
Well, the company that's doing it is out of Spain, and they have had some failed projects, and that's part right. of the concern, is that is this going to be a failed project? And then the latest thing that came out, that supposedly if the state decides to widen the free lanes, that they then have to pay a penalty to this company for their toll because they may lose some revenue.
Just bizarre. Now, looking back at your poll, June 2015, elections long, long way off. Overall, you've looked at it backwards and forwards. We went through it with the folks at lunch. We've gone through it on this show extensively. What do you think it means? Is there anything to be discerned from this that any group should be concerned about or be thinking about?
The only numbers I saw that were interesting was that the governor has lost support among what you would probably count as his base. You know, that would be the conservative base. And it's picked it up among liberals. Will those people stick with him, or will he have alienated his base as he heads into the election? That said, if I had to make a prediction right now, I predict the governor gets reelected. That absent any kind of economic upheaval or anything, the governor gets
it. I have maintained I still stick with it. 60-40 chance that the governor gets reelected. That doesn't mean that 60% of the electorate is going to vote for him. It means that if I'm a Vegas odds maker, I would say there's a 60-40 chance he gets reelected. And I think it's going to be largely on the economy, and unless something significant changes, that's how simplistic these elections can become, regardless of the millions of dollars in mailers, regardless of the fundraisers, regardless. But I do think that this is the first time, and I agree with your sentiment about that one thing, because it is showing something that heretofore all the grassroots people have said. People are saying in different counties that they're a lot of people on the conservative side of the political aisle, the Republican side of the aisle, are very frustrated with appointments, Democrat appointments in their county. They're frustrated with the direction on some of the issues that the governor has taken. And so for the first time, that's showing up in a poll where conservatives feel disenfranchised and liberals that I don't think are going to stick with him in the election are really happy with what he's doing.
Right, I think you're right, and you're absolutely right. When I talk to people and they start giving me anecdotal stories about
yes.
this, well, you're right.
And those are anecdotal. That's just
but this is
politics.
Not anecdotal. We
this
see
is a
this
true manifestation.
Yeah, I mean that those are real numbers that you know the governor's people should be looking at and saying, okay, do we have a problem here? How do we address
that? And I think if that number was 14, you said about 7%.
Right.
If 14%, if he had a 14% drop in conservatives and a 14% uptick with liberals in his approval numbers, I think that if that trend line that he has now with 7 and 7 roughly, that if that trend line continues, then we will have an entirely different discussion, say by November of this year. If there is enough alienation between conservatives and McCrory, he's not going to pick up those Democrat votes. When a true Democrat is sitting there on the ticket, they're not going to pick McCrory over a Democrat. That's my supposition.
I would think you're right.
Now, at some point, you have to wonder if that trend line stops and if he starts, you know, going back to his base. Because right now, his base, according to that, and I think, again, it's for the first time, anecdotal is correlating with science. So there's a scientific snapshot, and there's an anecdotal body of evidence that's been out there that didn't show up, but now it is. And that's where I think we are on that.
And the other thing, we talk about specific issues. I also think some of this is that the liberals are supporting his fight against the legislature because they see the legislature as the big, bad conservatives. So, again, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, you know, will they stick with him? Will they be his friend come election time when the other person is more liberal?
And what do you say to, you know, I think that there's an identity problem for North Carolina Republicans heading into 2016. Largely protected in gerrymandered districts. The districts are drawn for their voters not to protect the political establishment, not to give voters a choice. I think the only vulnerabilities would be in primaries.
Choice in the general. There is a choice in the primary.
The primary is where these people can be challenged. But there seems to be a very disjointed definition of what it is to be a Republican. Right? I think the Democrats are largely irrelevant. They're not establishing new ground. They're not really doing anything. Am I missing something there?
No, you're right. And in fact, what we have is an argument over really what's the future of the Republican Party in North Carolina. Is it going to be like the old Democrat Party, or is it going to be a true conservative governing party in terms of the scope of government, in terms of how you share the resources out of government? Is it going to be crony capitalism? Democrats were great at this. Are the Republicans
masterful?
Are the Republicans just going to do what the Democrats did and stay in power doing that?
Because I see a Senate, and here's how I'll break it. You tell me where I'm wrong. I look at the Senate as ideologically conservative, by and large, that are unapologetically so, that are most of them are in fairly safe districts, but they are not cowered by their beliefs. And when they present a budget, it is a political document and a statement about their beliefs and the direction they want to see the state go in. When they pass legislation, it generally tends to correlate with that. We can disagree around the edges, but that's generally it. I see a governor that governs from the center, kind of slightly center-right. You know, when you see him on social issues, not real comfortable on those issues. But he seems to be trying to get to the majority of voters across the state because his district is Murphy to Manio and all points north and south. Then I see the House that is in very comfortable districts that isn't ideologically driven. I mean, you're finding people like Tim Moore and the leadership that have put forth a budget that was not conservative while claiming it is. And that's a problem. I think they have an identity problem in the House. You know, most people say the House plays checkers and the Senate plays chess and seems to be two or three strategic moves ahead. Where am I missing things on that assessment?
I would say you did a pretty good analysis there. The only thing I might differ on the governor, I don't think it's just a social thing ideologically. Remember, he was the one that wanted a revenue neutral budget tax cut, and the Senate forced a actual tax cut.
Right.
You know, the governor is much more cautious, and I guess that's moderate, cautious, not really wanting to get out on the edges of
right.
the issues.
And to be fair, he did not lead when it came to tax cuts, when it came to regulatory reform, when it came to tort reform. He was not leading those fights. He signed the legislation for which he deserves credit.
That's important.
He wasn't out in front of that train.
And at the end of the day, he actually, I think, contributed to tax reform getting done in North Carolina by bringing everybody in and saying, okay, we got to get this done.
Yeah.
We've got to hear, brought everybody into the room, got it done. The governor doesn't get much credit for that, which he should get credit for.
Okay.
But now, the House is the interesting thing. I think this one I'm going to say about the House is I think a lot of the leadership of the House has people who have been in the legislature a long time.
They have been.
And maybe too long.
Well said. That was very delicately said. You know, we kind of more direct on the show, but you were much more diplomatic than we are here. So, but we're not paid to be diplomatic. We're paid to talk to people. So again, Francis DeLuca, Civitas Institute. Any final thoughts? When's the next poll? You've got a couple of events coming up. Let's talk about the one.
Talk about the poll first.
The poll.
August 20th, we will have our next poll launch. We're going to do it at the Marriott. So everybody be watching. I want to see everybody in that chat room at our poll launch on August 20th. On July 15th, we have an event about school choice and economic development. And that's, you can hear the ads here, but just need to go to
Thales Academy. This is about the impact of educational choice on the economy.
Thank you for rescuing me. We always hear about the economic importance of public education. Well, we think that there is a lot of economic importance about school choice and that can actually be a driver. And we used specific areas of Wake County to study. And we've seen in the study, this is an academic study, but we'll present it in a non-academic way. And we will talk about can school choice actually drive economic growth? Can it make people richer? Can it create more jobs? Can it create the more economic activity? And we think the answer is yes.
There have been a number of studies done along those lines. This is the first one in North Carolina that I'm aware of.
This is the first study like this anywhere.
Oh,
there have been some that have kind of looked at it at the edges, none that have taken it. This study now will call for more study to be done.
Very good point. Again, Francis DeLuca. Again, that's July 14th. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest will be speaking at that event. You can find out more about that at nccivitas.org for that event. And then the August luncheon. And Jim Daves.
John Davis from North Carolina Political Report, longtime director of NC Free. Will be the guest commentator in August. So come hear him.
One of my political mentors from my Institute of Political Leadership days back in the early 2001 or fall of 2001. Much more to go. Stay tuned here on What Matters with Chad Adams. Francis DeLuca, thank you. Lots to talk about. Your phone calls if you should want to. 919-747-9421. Stay tuned. My production area requires that the host of the show sit up like a dog getting a treat. It's the funniest thing. They hold their finger up as the music comes in. Your microphone's not on, Mr. Host. Your microphone's not on, Mr. Host. Your microphone is on! Speak like a dog! Bark like a dog. Woof! It's so funny. She's carrying this whip in there, and it's very Pavlovian, you know. Starting to want Krispy Kreme donuts or something when she has her finger up, you know. I don't get a treat, though. No treat. I can't even get... I barely get water, much less kibble. So, thank you, folks, for joining us. A lot going on. Chat room alive and well, and very appreciative for the conversation out there. The chat room, for those of you... If you do go to Mixlr.com and you're listening to the show, you can be a part... Well, I know there's some technical issues for people who are in the chat room that don't get seen, but by and large, you can and be a part of the conversation. And they often contribute stuff. They always have. They'll contribute facts. They'll have their own debates. They'll argue with each other. They'll beat up on the host. And I'm very thankful for them. So, having said that, I referred to it briefly earlier in the broadcast. But now, you know, there are a lot of states out there that are looking at this same-sex marriage thing. And they have laws that kind of... They're not anti-same-sex, but they can be perceived that way. And so what happens to all the laws that are on the books that deal with this? So clearly, the Supreme Court says, you're going to do it. You better do it. Now, does that mean businesses that cater weddings? You know, we've certainly seen the cupcakes and wedding planners and all that. You have to do it. If you have a Christian bakery, and you better be baking cakes. If another couple comes in there, regardless, you better be baking those cakes. I would imagine that if we ever get to the polygamy, a wedding cake in a polygamous relationship would be very tough unless they're doing it one at a time. If you have 10 wives, but you marry them one at a time, I guess the cake, you could have 10 different cakes, one wife at a time. Or maybe you just do layers and you have one layer for each wife. I don't know. You know, what about communal living? If you have three husbands and two wives, what kind of cake does that look like? It's like a makeshift Milky Way, Snickers bar, Reese's cake with... I don't know. But I'll go back to the Cricket milkshake. I think Cricket milkshakes... Maybe that's how you deal with it. That was from yesterday's show. Excuse the inference. If you're a regular listener, you got it. Now, what does it say about the laws that are out there? In North Carolina, we have our Register of Deeds Magistrates Law. If you don't believe religiously, if it offends you... offense is the wrong word. If it is not in your religious belief, should you be forced to marry a couple that comes in? This isn't very controversial because most of the Register of Deeds and Clerk of Courts across the state aren't really... the Clerk of Courts Magistrates are not having a problem with this. There's a couple that say, hey, I just don't want to do it. But there's plenty of other people that can. So even though the left would love to have you believe this is a pandemic and there's, you know, thousands of gay couples that can't get married, not an issue. But the law is still there, and it is in other states. So if you go to Rowan County, and this is from WRAL, actually, Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis shut her blinds when she arrived at work Tuesday, blocking the view of several dozen rainbow-clad protesters outside her office who chanted, "Do your job," and carried signs that read, "You don't own marriage." Then, at about 8:30 a.m., the newly elected clerk in Moorhead, Kentucky, turned away a local lesbian couple who walked in and asked for a marriage license. Davis is among a scattered assortment of public officials across the... I love the way WRAL attacks, you know, again, conservatives, the Bible Belt. These horrible people from the Bible Belt. So repulsed by the thought of enabling a same-sex marriage. You see how the way they word that? When we talk about spin on this show... This is a line of spin. You can easily edit this and rewrite this line. So here's the way it's written. Davis is among a scattered assortment of public officials across the Bible Belt, so repulsed by the thought of enabling a same-sex marriage that they are defying the U.S. Supreme Court and refusing to issue a license to anyone gay or straight. Where they easily could have said, Davis is among a scattered assortment of public officials who believe that marriage should be between one man and one woman and are legally trying to figure out a way to deal with that belief in opposition to the Supreme Court. There's a thousand different ways to write that line, but WRAL chooses to go left because that's their slant. Judges and clerks in Alabama and Texas have done the same, citing laws, state laws. They say they may issue a marriage license. If they may, then they may not, some argue. The ruling legalizing gay marriage nationwide left room for personal religious objections, but these officials are asserting a broader right, claiming that they won't be discriminating if they take their government offices out of the marriage business altogether. The immediate result is a confusing array of ad hoc policies as some state and local governments wrestle over how and when to implement what the highest court in the land called a constitutional right for all Americans. Nothing in the Constitution about marriage, by the way. And in fact, we still have a 10th Amendment issue that we haven't reconciled yet, but that'll be another day. Hours after Friday's ruling, Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear ordered clerks to immediately begin issuing marriage licenses to gay couples. They should hand them out. They should just go, you know what? You should just be able to go to a dispensing machine and hit a button and get a marriage license. Why do you need a person at all? You can handle this. Okay, look at that. I need to go to Shark Tank. I need to take this idea to Shark Tank, and I can invent the vending machine that distributes marriage licenses using artificial intelligence. But anyway, let's go back to the story before I get delusions of grandeur. A handful refused, citing their faith in the American promise of religious liberty and free speech. It's a deep-rooted conviction. My conscience won't allow me to do that, Davis told the Associated Press after refusing a license to April Miller and Karen Roberts. I wonder if one of them takes the other's name, who have been together for 11 years and was Rowan County's first gay couple to request one. It goes, everything I hold dear, everything sacred in my life. Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway's spokesman, Leland Hulbert, said the issue will likely have to be resolved in civil court. The office encouraged couples to seek private counsel. So, where does it go? Ultimately, I think most people are going to shrug after. Most people just don't get involved in this. There's a vocal minority on all sides, even though the vast majority of people in this state, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, moderate, believe that marriage should be between one man and one woman. Those beliefs will die hard. It will see, you know, will there be a blowback against the Supreme Court? I doubt it. But for right now, magistrates still have the option of refusing to marry a couple based on their beliefs. But I still, you know, you have to wonder if it's really that simple. Now, I would love to see it go the opposite direction. I would love to see the courts out of this business. I would love to see government out of the marriage business. People said, well, what about taxes? What about the exemption for marriage? Flat tax. Get rid of the exemptions. Get rid of all these carve-outs. Flat tax. We know what we're paying for. Makes taxes real simple. Here's a form. Here's how much you made. Send in this percentage, whatever it is. Get rid of these exemptions. Make taxes simpler. Make it a lot cheaper to do taxes. And since marriage really has lost the meaning originally, it's kind of gone. It's now just about coupling. It really is about coupling. And so the Supreme Court has ratified and said everybody can be a couple. Not a three-way, but it can be a couple. So we're just arguing about couples, and they say the argument's done. So if it's just about couples, just have a vending machine set up. Issue a marriage license and be done with it. You know, you can actually have a touch screen. Fill it out. Fill out the touch screen, hit the button. The machine can say, it can get you, can document the fact that you say you're a couple, and you can do a biometric thing with your thumb, and you're done, and you're married. No registrar needed, no magistrate needed. You can even have a kiosk outside. You don't even need to go in. And it can file it for you digitally. Done. Can't wait. And mark my words, you'll be able to do it. I'll bet you someone already figured out a way to do it. If you can do online banking, you can certainly probably get an online marriage. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast today, each and every day, live from 3 to 5, heard thereafter at freedomactionnetwork.net. Podcast also available if you missed a segment of the show and you'd like to do that. We're putting those together. Lisa working very diligently to try to get that up and running. We're working to make the format easier each and every day. You have suggestions, feel free to contact us through the chat room. We do monitor that and read that. And again, hope you have a great day. Be careful. A little thunderstorm activity out there and all around North Carolina, most counties. So be careful, and we'll talk to you tomorrow about 3 p.m. Have a great day, folks.